one of deep thought, not displeasure. She hadn't even noticed him. Quickly, he put the book away and darted out into the hallway before she could get too far, grasping her arm and tugging her into the shadows. As ever, she was never startled by him, and met him halfway, clutching the books to her chest with one arm while the other went around his neck as they kissed. "Hello, my lady," he murmured, kissing her neck, gritting against her skin. "Hello, my prince," she murmured happily, sighing.
"Jaina," came a voice. "Why are you—"
They sprang apart guiltily, staring at the intruder. Jaina gasped softly, and color sprang to her face.
"Kael!"
The elf's face was carefully composed, but anger burned in his eyes, and his jaw was set. "You dropped a book as you left," he said, lifting the tome. "I followed you to return it." Jaina glanced up at Arthas, biting her lower lip. He was as startled as she, but he forced an easy smile. He kept his arm around Jaina as he turned to Kaelthas.
"That's very kind of you, Kael," he said. "Thanks."
For a moment, he thought Kaelthas would attack him. Anger and outrage fairly crackled around the mage. He was powerful, and Arthas knew that he wouldn't stand a chance. Even so, he kept his gaze even with the elven princess, not backing down an inch. Kaelthas clenched his fists and remained where he was.
"Ashamed of her, are you, Arthas?" Kaelthas hissed. "Is she only worth your time and attention if no one knows about her?"
Arthas's eyes narrowed.
"I had thought to avoid the ravages of the rumor mill," he said quietly. "You know how those things work, Kael, don't you? Someone says something, and next thing you know, it's believed to be true. I would protect her reputation by—"
"Protect!"
Kaelthas barked the word.
"If you cared about her, you would court her openly, proudly. Any man would."
He looked at Jaina, and the anger was gone, replaced by a fleeting expression of pain. Then that, too, disappeared. Jaina looked down. "I will leave you two to your tryst. And do not fear. I will say nothing." With an angry hiss, he scornfully tossed the book toward Jaina. The tome, likely invaluable, landed with a thump at Jaina's feet, and she started at the sound. Then he was gone in a swirl of violet and gold robes. Jaina let out her breath and laid her head on Arthas's chest. Arthas patted her back gently.
"It's all right. He's gone now."
"I'm sorry. I guess I should have told you." His chest contracted.
"Told me what?"
"Jaina, are you and he—"
"No,"
she answered at once, gazing up at him.
"No,
but I think he wanted to. I just—" "He's a good man, and a powerful mage, and a prince. But he's not—" Her voice trailed off.
"He's not what?"
The words came out sharper than he had intended. Kael was so many things Arthas wasn't. Older, more sophisticated, experienced, powerful, and almost impossibly physically perfect. He felt jealousy growing inside him, in a cold, hard knot. If Kael had reappeared at that moment, Arthas wasn't so sure he wouldn't take a swing at him. Jaina smiled softly, the furrow in her brow uncreasing.
"He's not you."
The icy knot inside him melted, like winter retreating before the warmth of spring, and he pulled her to him and kissed her again. Who cared what a stuffy elven prince thought, anyway? The year unfolded largely without incident. As summer gave way to a crisp fall and then winter, more complaints rose about the cost of tending to the orc camps, but both Terranus and Arthas expected such. Arthas continued to train with Uther. The older man was adamant that while training at arms was important, so was prayer and meditation.
"Yes, we must be able to cut down our enemies," he said, "but we must also be able to heal our friends and ourselves." Arthas thought about Invincible. His thoughts always drifted to the horse in winter, and Uther's comment only reminded him, yet again, of what he regarded as the one failure in his entire life. If only he had begun training earlier, the great white stallion would still be alive. He had never revealed to anyone exactly what had happened on that snowy day. They all believed it was an accident. And it was, Arthas told himself. He had not deliberately intended to harm Invincible. He loved the horse. He would sooner have harmed himself. And if he'd begun paladin training earlier, like Varian had done with sword fighting, he'd have been able to save Invincible. He swore that would not happen again. He would do whatever was necessary so that he would never be caught unawares and impotent, would never not be able to make it right. The winter passed, as all winters must, and spring came to Tirisfal Glades again. And so did Jaina Proudmoore, arriving and looking to Arthas as beautiful, fresh, and welcome a sight as the new blossoms on the awakening trees. She had come to assist him in publicly celebrating Noble Garden, the major spring celebration in Lordaeron and Stormwind. Arthas found that staying up late the night before, sipping wine and filling eggs with candy and other treats, was not quite the boring task it would have been had Jaina not been there with him. Her brow furrowed in the endearing fashion he had come to recognize as hers and hers alone, as she carefully and intently filled the eggs and set them aside. While there was still no public announcement, Arthas and Jaina both knew their parents had spoken with one another, and there was a tacit agreement that the courtship would be permitted. So it was that more and more Arthas, beloved already by his people, was sent to represent Lordaeron at public functions, rather than Uther or Terranus. With the passing of time, Uther had increasingly withdrawn into the spiritual aspect of the light, and Terranus seemed more than content to not have to travel. "It is exciting when you are young, to travel for days on horseback and sleep under the stars," he told Arthas. "When you are my age, though, horseback riding is best left for recreation, and the stars one can glimpse by looking out the window are quite close enough." Arthas had grinned, diving with pleasure into the new responsibilities. Admiral Proudmoore and Archmage Antonidas had apparently come to the same conclusions. For more and more often, when messengers from Dalaran were sent to Capital City, Lady Jaina Proudmoore accompanied them. "Come for the Midsummer Fire Festival," he said suddenly. She looked up at him, holding an egg carefully in one hand, brushing a lock of golden hair from her face with the other. "I can't. Summer is a very intensive time for the students at Dalaran. Antonidas has already told me to expect to stay there the whole time." Regret was in her voice. "Then I'll come visit you for Midsummer, and you can come for Hallow's End," Arthas said. She shook her head and laughed at him. "You are persistent, Arthas Menethil. I will try." "No, you'll come." He reached across the table, littered with carefully hollowed out, brightly painted eggs and small candies, and placed his hand over hers. She smiled, still a little shy after all this time, her cheeks turning pink. She would come. There were several smaller festivals leading up to Hallow's End. One was somber, one was celebratory, and this one was a bit of both. It was believed to be a time when the barrier between the living and the dead was thin, and those who had passed on could be sensed by those still alive. Tradition had it that at the end of the harvest season, before the winds of winter began to blow, that a straw effigy would be erected right outside the palace. At sunset on the night of the ceremony, it would be lit on fire. It was an awesome sight, a giant, flaming wicker man, burning bright against the encroaching night. Anyone who wished could approach the fiery effigy, toss a branch into the crackling flames, and in so doing, metaphorically, burn away anything he did not wish to carry into the quiet, deep reflection time
provided by winter's enforced inactivity. It was a peasant ritual, sprung up from time immemorial. Arthas suspected that few nowadays truly believed that tossing a branch into a fire would really solve their problems. Even fewer believed that contact with the dead was possible. He certainly didn't. But it was a popular celebration, and it brought Jaina back to Lordaeron. And for those reasons, he was looking forward to it. He had a little surprise for her in mind. It was right after sunset. The crowds had begun gathering in late afternoon. Some had even brought picnics and made an event out of enjoying the last few days of late autumn among the hills of Tirisfal. There were guards stationed about, keeping an eye out for the mishaps that often happen when large numbers of people are gathered in one place. But Arthas really didn't expect any difficulties. When he came out of the palace, clad in a tunic, breeches, and cloak of rich autumnal hues, cheers erupted. He paused and waved at the onlookers, accepting their applause, then turned and extended his hand to Jaina. She looked a little surprised, but smiled, and the cheers now lifted her name to the darkening sky as well as his. Arthas and Jaina walked down the path to the giant wicker man and stood before it. Arthas held up a hand for silence.
"My countrymen, I join you in celebration of this most revered of nights, the nights when we remember those who are no longer with us and cast aside the things that hold us back. We burn the effigy of the wicker man as a symbol of the year that is passing, much as the farmers burn the remains of the harvested fields. The ashes nourish the soil, and this rite nourishes our souls. It is good to see so many here tonight. I am pleased to be able to offer the distinct honor of lighting the wicker man to Lady Jaina Proudmoore."
Jaina's eyes went wide. Arthas turned to her, grinning wickedly.
"She is the daughter of war hero Admiral Daelin Proudmoore, and promises to be a powerful mage in her own right. As Magi are masters of fire, I think it only right that she light our wicker man this evening. Do you agree?"
Those assembled roared with delight, as Arthas knew they would. Arthas bowed to Jaina, then leaned in and whispered,
"Give them a show. They'll love it."
Jaina nodded imperceptibly, then turned to the crowd and waved. Their cheering increased. She tucked a lock of hair behind her ear, briefly revealing her nervousness, then composed her face. She closed her eyes and lifted her hands, murmuring an incantation. Jaina was dressed in fire hues of red, yellow, and orange. As small balls of flame began to materialize in her hands, glowing faintly at first, and then with increasing brightness, she looked to Arthas like fire itself for a moment. She held the fire in her hands with ease, comfort, and mastery, and he knew that the days when she had little control over her spells were long gone. She wasn't going to become a powerful mage. She obviously already was one, in fact, if not in title. And then she extended both hands. The balls of fire leaped like a bullet fired from a gun, hurtling toward the enormous straw effigy. It erupted into flame at once, and the onlookers gasped, then broke into wild applause. Arthas grinned. The wicker man never caught on fire that quickly when an ordinary brand was touched to its base. Jaina opened her eyes at the sound and waved, smiling delightedly. Arthas leaned close and whispered, "Spectacular, Jaina."
"You asked me to give them a show," she shot back, grinning at him. "Indeed I did. But that was almost too good a show. They're going to demand that you light the wicker man every year now, I'm afraid."
She turned to look at him. "Would that be a problem?" The light from the blazing fire danced over her, illuminating her lively features, catching the glint of a gold circlet adorning her head. Arthas caught his breath as he regarded her. She'd always been attractive to him, and he'd liked her from the moment they'd met. She'd been a friend, a confidant, an exciting flirtation. But now he couldn't help but see her, quite literally, in a whole new light. It took a moment for him to find his voice.
No,
he said softly.
No.
It wouldn't be a problem at all. They joined the throngs dancing by the fire that night, causing the guards no end of consternation as they went right down among the populace and shook hands and exchanged greetings. And then they gave the dutiful guards the slip, losing themselves in the crowd and stealing away unnoticed. Arthas led her through the back corridors to the private living quarters of the palace. Once they were almost caught by some servants taking a shortcut to the kitchens and had to flatten themselves against the wall and stay perfectly still for several long moments. Then they were in Arthas's rooms. He closed the door, leaned back up against it, and swept her into his arms, kissing her deeply. But it was she, shy, studious Jaina, who broke the kiss and moved toward the bed, leading him by the hand, the orange light from the still-blazing wicker man outside dancing on their skin. He followed, almost as in a daze, a dream. As they stood beside the bed, their hands clasped so tightly, Arthas feared her fingers would snap in his grip.
Jaina, he whispered.
Arthas, she said, the word a whimper, and kissed him again, her hands reaching up to clasp his face between her hands. He was dizzy with wanting her, and felt suddenly bereft as she drew back. Her breath was soft and warm on his face as she whispered,
Are we ready for this?
He started to answer flippantly, but he knew what she was really asking. He could not imagine being more ready to bring this girl the rest of the way into his heart. He had turned down the lovely Tarifa, and she had not been the first he had said no to. Jaina, he knew, was even less experienced than he in such matters.
I am, if you are, he whispered hoarsely,
and as he bent to kiss her again, he saw the familiar furrow of worry cross her brow.
I will kiss it away,
he vowed, bringing her onto the bed with him.
I will make everything you could ever worry about go away forever.
Later, when the wicker man had finally burned out, and the only light on Jaina's sleeping form was the cool blue-white of moonlight, Arthas still lay awake, running his fingers along the curves of her body, and alternately wondering where this would all lead, and feeling content to simply be in the moment. He had not tossed in a branch to the wicker man fire, because he had nothing he wished to be rid of. Nor did he now, he thought, bending forward to kiss her. Jaina awakened with a soft sigh, reaching for him.
No one can seem to deny you anything, she murmured, repeating the words she had said to him the day of their first kiss. Least of all me.
He clutched her to him then, a sudden cold shivering over him, though he had no idea why.
Don't deny me, Jaina. Don't ever deny me. Please.
She looked up at him, eyes glittering in the cool moonlight. I never would, Arthas. Never. Chapter 8. The palace had never been so cheerily decorated for the Feast of Winter Vale as it was this year. Muradin, ever a good ambassador of his people, had brought the dwarven tradition to Lordaeron upon his arrival. Over the years, it had increased in popularity, and this year, the people seemed to truly take it to heart. The festive tone had been established a few weeks earlier, when Jaina had delighted them so with her theatrical display of igniting the Wicker Man. She had been granted permission to stay through the winter if she so chose, although Dalaran was not far to one who could teleport herself. Something had changed. It was both subtle and profound. Jaina Proudmoore was starting to be treated as more than the daughter of the ruler of Kul Tiras, more than a friend. She was starting to be treated as a member of the royal family. Arthas first realized it when his mother took both Jaina and Kallia to be fitted for the formal dresses fashion required for the Wintervale Eve Ball. Other guests had spent Wintervale here. Leon had never before wanted to coordinate their outfits with her own and that of her daughter. 2. Taranis now often requested that Jaina join him and Arthas when they sat to listen to the people's petitions. She sat on the king's left, Arthas on his right, in a position nearly equal to the king's own son. Well, Arthas thought, he supposed that it was the logical conclusion. Wasn't it? He recalled his words to Kalia years ago. "We each have our duties, I guess. You to marry whomever father wants, and me to marry well for the kingdom." Jaina would be good for the kingdom. Jaina, he thought, would be good for him too. So why did the thought make him feel so uneasy? They had fresh snow for the night before Wintervale. Arthas stood looking out of a large window at Lordamere Lake, frozen over now. The snow had begun falling at dawn and had stopped about an hour ago. The sky was black velvet, the stars small icy diamonds against the soft darkness, and moonlight made everything look still, hushed, and magical. A soft hand slipped into his. "Beautiful, isn't it?" Jaina said quietly. Arthas nodded, not looking at her. "Plenty of ammunition." "What?" "Ammunition," Jaina repeated. "For snowball fights." He finally turned to her, and his breath caught. He'd not been permitted to see the gowns she, Kalia, and his mother would be wearing to the banquet and ball this evening, and he was stunned by her beauty. Jaina Proudmoore looked like a snow maiden. From shoes that looked to be made of ice, to a white gown tinged with the palest blue, to the circlet of silver that caught the warm glow of the torchlight, she was heartbreakingly lovely. But she was no ice queen, no statue. She was warm and soft and alive, her golden hair flowing about her shoulders, her cheeks pink beneath his admiring gaze, her blue eyes bright with happiness. "You're like a white candle," he said. "All white and gold." He reached for a lock of her hair, twirling it about his fingers. She grinned. "Yes," she laughed, reaching to touch his own bright locks. "The children will almost certainly be blonde." He froze. "Jaina, are you?" She chuckled. "No, not yet. But there's no reason to think we won't be able to have children." Children, again, the word that galvanized him in shock and peculiar distress. She was talking about the children they would have. His mind galloped into the future, a future with Jaina as his wife, their children in the palace, his parents gone, himself on the throne, the weight of the crown on his head. Part of him desperately wanted that. He loved having Jaina by his side, loved holding her in his arms at night, loved the taste and smell of her, loved her laughter, pure as a bell and sweet as the scent of roses. He loved... What if he ruined it? Because suddenly he knew that until this moment it had all been child's play. He'd thought of Jaina as a companion, just as she had been since his boyhood, except their games were now of a more adult nature. But something had suddenly shifted inside him. What if this was real? What if he really was in love with her, and she with him? What if he was a bad husband, a bad king? What if... "I'm not ready," he blurted. Her brow furrowed. "Well, we do not have to have little ones right away." She squeezed his hand in what was clearly intended to be a gesture of reassurance. Arthas suddenly dropped her hand and took a step backward. Her frown deepened in confusion. "Arthas? What's wrong?" "Jaina, we're too young," he said, speaking rapidly, his voice rising slightly. "I'm too young. There's still... I can't... I'm not ready." She paled. "You aren't... I thought..." Guilt racked him. She'd asked him this the night they became lovers. "Are you ready for this?" she had whispered. "I am if you are," he had replied, and he'd meant it. He really had thought he'd meant it.
Arthas reached out and grabbed her hands, trying desperately to articulate the emotions racing through him. "I still have so much to learn, so much training to complete, and Father needs me. Uther's got so much he needs to teach, and, Jaina, we've always been friends. You've always understood me so well. Can't you understand me now? Can't we still be friends?"
Her bloodless lips opened, but no words came out at first. Her hands were limp in his. Almost frantically, he squeezed them.
"Jaina, please. Please understand, even if I don't."
"Of course, Arthas." Her voice was a monotone. "We'll always be friends, you and I." Everything, from her posture to her face to her voice, bespoke her pain and her shock. But Arthas clung instead to her words as a wave of relief so profound it made his knees weak swept over him. It was all going to be just fine. It might upset her now a little, but surely she'd understand soon. They knew each other. She'd figure out that he was right, that it was too soon.
"I mean, this isn't forever," he said, feeling the need to explain. "Just for now. You've got studying to do. I'm sure I've been a distraction. Antonidas probably resents me."
She said nothing.
"This is for the best. Maybe one day it'll be different and we can try again. It's not that I don't, that you..."
He pulled her into his arms and hugged her. She was stiff as stone for a moment. Then he felt the tension leave her, and her arms went around him. They stood alone in the hall for a long time, Arthas resting his cheek against her bright gold hair. The hair that, no doubt, their children would indeed have been born with, might still be born with.
"I don't want to close the door," he said quietly.
It's all right, Arthas. I understand." He stepped back, his hands on her shoulders, peering into her eyes.
"Do you?"
She laughed slightly. "Honestly? No. But it's all right. It will be eventually, anyway. I know that.
Jaina, I just want to make sure this is right. For both of us.
I don't want to mess this up. I can't mess this up." She nodded. She took a deep breath and steadied herself, giving him a smile. A real, if hurting, smile.
"Come, Prince Arthas. You need to escort your friend to the ball."
Arthas somehow made it through the evening, and so did Jaina, although Taranis kept giving him strange glances. He didn't want to tell his father, not yet. It was a strained, an unhappy night, and at one point during a pause in the dancing, Arthas looked out at the blanket of white snow and the moon's silvered lake and wondered why everything bad seemed to happen in winter. Lieutenant General Aedelis Blackmore didn't look particularly happy to have this exclusive audience with King Taranis and Prince Arthas. In fact, he looked like he desperately would like to slink away unnoticed. The years had not been kind to him, neither physically nor in the hand fate had dealt him. Arthas recalled a handsome, rather dashing military commander who, while doubtless overfond of his drink, at least seemed able to keep the ravages of it at bay. No longer. Blackmore's hair was streaked with gray, he had put on weight, and his eyes were bloodshot. He was, fortunately, stone-cold sober. Had he showed up to this meeting intoxicated, Taranis, a firm believer in the need for moderation in all things, would have refused to see him. Blackmore was here today because he had messed up. Badly. Somehow, The man's prized gladiator orc, Thrall, had escaped Dernhold in a fire. Blackmore had tried to keep it quiet and conduct his search for the orc personally and on a small scale. But a secret as large as a massive green orc could not be contained forever. Once word had gotten out, rumors flew wildly, of course. It was a rival lord who had freed the orc, anxious to ensure winning in the rings. It was a jealous mistress, hoping to embarrass him. It was a clever band of orcs, unaffected by the strange lethargy. No, it was Orgrim Doomhammer himself. It was dragons, infiltrating disguised as humans, who lit the place afire with only their breath. Arthas had thought Thrall exciting to watch in combat. But he recalled that even then, the thought had crossed his mind whether it was wise to train and educate an orc. When information had come that Thrall was on the loose, Tyrannus had summoned Blackmore immediately for an accounting. It was bad enough that you thought it a good idea to train an orc to fight in gladiatorial combat, Tyrannus began, but to train him in military strategy, to teach him to read, to write. I must ask, Lieutenant General, what in the light's name were you thinking? Arthas smothered a grin as Aedalus Blackmore seemed to physically diminish right in front of his eyes. You assured me that the funds and materials went directly into stepping up security, and that your pet orc was securely guarded, Tyrannus continued. And yet somehow he is out of there, instead of safely inside Dernhold. How is that possible? Blackmore frowned and rallied somewhat. It is certainly unfortunate that Thrall escaped. I'm sure you understand how I must feel. It was a hit on Blackmore's part. Tyrannus still smarted from the fact that Doomhammer had escaped from under his very nose. But it wasn't a particularly wise hit. Tyrannus frowned and continued. I hope this isn't part of some disturbing trend. The money is earned from the labor of the people, Lieutenant General. It goes toward keeping them safe. Do I need to send along a representative to ensure that the funds are properly distributed? No, that won't be necessary. I will account for every penny. Yes, said Tyrannus, with deceptive mildness. You will. When Blackmore finally left, bowing obsequiously the whole way out, Tyrannus turned to his son. What are your thoughts on the situation? You saw Thrall in action. Arthas nodded. He wasn't at all like I had imagined orcs to be. I mean, he was huge, and fought fiercely. But it was obvious he was also intelligent, and trained. Tyrannus stroked his beard, thinking, There are pockets of renegade orcs out there. Some who might not have this lassitude that the ones we've imprisoned have demonstrated. If Thrall were to find them, and teach them what he knows, it could be a very bad thing for us. Arthas sat up straighter. This could be what he'd been looking for. I've been training hard with Uther. And he had been. Unable to properly explain to others and to himself why he had ended the relationship with Jaina, he'd thrown himself into his training. He'd fought for hours a day until his body ached, attempting to sufficiently exhaust himself so that he could get her face out of his mind. It had been what he wanted, hadn't it? She'd taken it well. So why was it he who lay awake at night, missing her warmth and presence with a pain that bordered on agony? He had even embraced hitherto despised hours spent in still, silent meditation in an effort to distract himself. Maybe if he focused on fighting, on learning how to accept and channel and direct the light, he could get the hell over her. Over the girl he himself had broken up with.
We could go looking for such orcs.
Find them before Thrall does.
Taranis nodded. Uther has informed me of your dedication, and he's been impressed with your progress. He reached a decision. Very well, then. Go tell Uther and start preparing. It's time for your first taste of real battle. Arthas was hard put not to let out a whoop of excitement. He refrained, even in his delight, picking up on the pained, worried look on his father's face. Maybe, just maybe, killing rebellious greenskins would erase the memory of Jaina's stricken expression when he'd ended their relationship.
Thank you, sir. I'll do you proud.
Despite the regret in his father's blue-green eyes, so like Arthas's own, Taranis smiled. That, my son, is the least of my worries. Chapter 9. Jaina raced through the gardens, late to her meeting with Archmage Antonidas. She'd done it again, lost track of time with her nose buried in a book. Her master was always chiding her about that, but she couldn't help it. Her slippered feet took her down between the rows of golden bark apple trees, the fruit hanging heavy and ripe. She felt a brief brush of sorrow as she remembered a conversation held here only a few short years ago, when Arthas had appeared behind her, slipping his hands over her eyes and whispering, "Guess who?" Arthas. She missed him still. She supposed she always would. The breakup had been unexpected and hurtful, and the timing couldn't have been worse. She still cringed as she thought about having to continue through the formal Winter Vale ball as if nothing had gone wrong. But, as the initial shock had faded, she had grown to understand his reasoning. They were both young yet, and, as he had pointed out at the time, they had responsibilities and training to complete. She'd promised him they'd always stay friends, and she had meant it then and afterward. In order for her to keep that promise, she had had to heal, and so she had done. Certainly much had happened in those few short years to keep her busy and focused elsewhere. 5 years ago, a powerful wizard named Kel'Thuzad had drawn the ire of the Kirin Tor with his dabbling in unnatural necromantic magic. He had left suddenly and mysteriously after being severely reprimanded and told in no uncertain terms to cease his experiments immediately. The mystery had been one of many things that had helped distract her over the last 3 years. Outside the gates of the magical city, things had happened too, though information was scattered, rumor-ridden, and chaotic. As best Jaina had been able to determine, the escaped orc Thrall, now calling himself the war chief of the new horde, had begun attacking the internment camps and freeing the captive orcs. Later, Durnhold itself had been razed by this self-styled war chief, crumbling into ruins as Thrall called forth what Jaina had learned was the ancient shamanistic magic of his people. Blackmoor had fallen too, but by all accounts, he would not be mourned over long. While troubled at what this new horde might eventually mean for her people, Jaina could not find it in herself to mourn the loss of the camps, not after what she had seen of them. Voices reached her ears, one raised in anger. So unusual was that in this place that Jaina slid to an abrupt halt.
"As I told Taranis, your people are prisoners of their own lands. I repeat to you now, humanity is in peril. The tides of darkness have come again, and the whole world is poised upon the brink of war."
The voice was male, resonant, and strong, and Jaina did not recognize it.
"Ah, I know now who you must be. You are the rambling prophet who was the subject of King Taranis's last letter, and I am no more interested in your babble than he is."
The other speaker was Antonidas, as calm as the stranger was insistent.
Jaina knew that she should discreetly withdraw before she was noticed, but the same curiosity that had driven the girl she had been to go along with Arthas to spy on the orc encampments now prompted her to cloak herself in invisibility and to learn more. She moved closer, as quietly as possible. She could see them both now, the first speaker, whom Antonidas had sarcastically referred to as a prophet, clad in a cloak and hood decorated with black feathers, and her master on horseback.
I thought Terranus was quite plain in his opinion of your predictions. You must be wiser than the king. The end is near.
I told you before, I'm not interested in this nonsense.
Clipped, calm, dismissive. Jaina knew that tone of voice. The prophet was silent for a moment, then he sighed.
Then I have wasted my time here.
Before Jaina's startled gaze, the stranger's shape blurred. It compressed and shifted, and where an instant before a man in a cowled robe had stood, now there was only a large black bird. With a caw of frustration, it sprang skyward, flapping its wings, and was gone. His eyes still on the interloper, now a vanishing dot in the blue sky, Antonidas said,
You can show yourself now, Jaina.
Heat washed over Jaina's face. She murmured a counterspell and edged forward.
I'm sorry for the eavesdropping, Master, but it's your inquisitive nature that I've come to rely on, child, Antonidas said, chuckling a little. That crazed fool's convinced that the world's about to end. That's taking the whole plague thing a bit far, in my opinion.
Plague? Jaina started. Antonidas sighed and dismounted, sending his steed off with an amiable slap to the rear. The horse pranced a little, then trotted obediently off to the stables, where a groom would attend to him. The archmage beckoned to his apprentice, who stepped forward and took the outstretched, gnarled hand.
You will recall I sent some messengers to Capital City a short time ago.
I thought that was regarding the orc situation. Antonidas murmured an incantation, and a few moments later they appeared in his private quarters. Jaina loved this place, loved the untidiness, the smell of parchment and leather and ink, and the old chairs into which one could curl and lose oneself in knowledge. He gestured for her to sit, and with a crook of a finger had a pitcher pour nectar for them.
Well, that was on the agenda, yes, but my representatives thought that a more dire threat was at our doorstep.
More dire than the horde reforming? Jaina extended her hand, and the crystal goblet, filled with golden liquid, floated into her palm.
Orcs, potentially, could be reasoned with. Disease cannot. There are reports of a plague spreading in the Northlands, something I think the Kirin Tor should be paying close attention to.
Jaina peered at him, her brow furrowing as she sipped.
Generally, disease fell under the auspices of the priests, not magi.
Unless...
You think it's magical in nature somehow?
He nodded his bald head. It's a strong possibility.
And that's why, Jaina Proudmore, I am asking you to travel to these lands and investigate the matter.
Jaina nearly choked on her nectar.
Me?
He smiled gently.
You? You have learned nearly everything I have to teach. It's time you utilized those skills outside of the safety of these towers.
His eyes twinkled again. And I have arranged for a special envoy to assist you. Arthas lounged against a tree, turning his face up to the weak sunlight and closing his eyes. He knew he radiated calmness and confidence. He had to. His men were worrying enough for all of them. He couldn't let them see that he, too, was anxious. After all this time, how would they get along? Maybe it hadn't been so smart a decision after all. But all the reports had been glowing, and he knew that she had the most level of heads. It would work out all right. It had to. One of his captains, Falric, whom Arthas had known for years, stomped about, going a little way down one of the four paths at this crossroads, then returning to venture a short distance down another. His breath was visible in the chill, and his irritation was obviously growing by the minute. "Prince Arthas," he finally ventured, "we've been waiting here for hours. Are you sure this friend of yours is coming?" Arthas's lips curved in a slight smile as he answered without opening his eyes. The men had not been told, for reasons of security. "I'm sure." He was. He thought about all the other times he had patiently waited for her. Jaina usually runs a little late. No sooner had the words left his lips than he heard a distant bellow, and the barely decipherable words, "Me smash!" Like a panther dozing in the sun only to waken instantly alert, Arthas sprang to attention, hammer in hand. He started down the road to see a slender, feminine shape racing toward him as she crested the hill into his vision. Behind her loomed what he knew to be an elemental, a swirling blob of aqua-colored water with a crude head and limbs. And behind that were two ochres. "By the light!" cried Falric, starting to race forward. Arthas would have beaten him to the girl except for the fact that right at that moment he caught sight of Jaina Proudmoore's face. She was grinning. "Stay your blade, Captain," Arthas said, feeling his own lips curve into a grin. "She can take care of herself." And so indeed the lady could, and efficiently. At that precise moment, Jaina wheeled and began to summon fire. Arthas realized that if he was going to feel sorry for anyone in this conflict, it was the poor, baffled ogres, bellowing in pain as fire licked their pudgy, pale forms, and staring in shock at the tiny human female responsible for such astonishing agony. One of them had the sense to run, but the other, seemingly unable to believe it, kept coming. Jaina sent a blast of rumbling orange flame at it again, and it cried out and collapsed, burning to death quickly, the rank scent of charred flesh filling Arthas's nostrils. Jaina watched the second one flee, dusted her hands off, and nodded. She hadn't even broken a sweat. "Gentlemen, meet Miss Jaina Proudmoore," Arthas drawled, walking up to his childhood friend and former lover. "Special agent to the Kirin Tor, and one of the most talented sorceresses in the land. Looks like you haven't lost your touch." She turned to face him, smiling up at him. There was no awkwardness in this moment, only happiness. She was glad to see him, and he her, the pleasure swelling inside him. "It's good to see you again." So much and so few, almost formal words. But she understood him. She had always understood him. Her eyes were sparkling as she replied, "You too. It's been a while since a prince escorted me anywhere." "Yes," he said, a slight hint of ruefulness coloring his tone. "It has." Now it was awkward, and Jaina looked down and he cleared his throat. "Well, I guess we should get underway." She nodded, dismissing the elemental with a wave of her hand. "I don't need this fellow with such stalwart soldiers," she said, gifting Falric and his men with one of her best smiles. "So, Your Highness, what do you know about this plague we're to investigate?"
"Not much,"
Arthas was forced to confess as they fell into step.
"Father just now sent me to work with you. Uther's been fighting with me against the orcs most recently. But I'd guess that if the Dalaran wizards want to find out more about it, it's got something to do with magic."
She nodded, still smiling, although her brow was starting to furrow in that familiar fashion. Arthas felt an odd pang as he noticed it.
"Quite right. Although exactly how, I'm not sure. That's why Master Antonidas sent me to observe and report back. We should check out the villages along the King's Road. Talk to the inhabitants. See if they know anything useful. Hopefully they have not been infected, and this is nothing more serious than a localized outbreak of some sort. He, who knew her so well, could hear the doubt in her voice. He understood it. If Antonidas really believed it wasn't serious, he wouldn't have sent his prized apprentice to check it out, nor would King Tyrannus have sent his son. He changed the topic.
I wonder if it had anything to do with the orcs.
At her raised eyebrow, he continued, I'm sure you've heard about the escapes from the internment camps. She nodded.
Yes. I sometimes wonder if that little family we saw was among those who escaped.
He shifted uneasily.
Well, if they are, they might still be worshipping demons.
Her eyes widened.
What? I thought that was stamped out long ago, that the orcs were no longer using demonic energy.
Arthas shrugged. Father sent Uther and me to help defend Strandbrad. By the time I got there, orcs had already begun kidnapping villagers. We hunted them down at their encampment, but three men were sacrificed.
Jaina was listening now, as she always did, not just with her ears, but with her whole body, concentrating on every word with the focus that he remembered. Light, but she was beautiful.
The orcs said they were offering them up to their demons, called it a paltry sacrifice. Clearly, they wanted more.
And Antonidas seems to think this plague is magical in nature, Jaina murmured. I wonder if there is a connection.
It's disheartening to hear that they have reverted so.
Perhaps it is only a single clan.
Perhaps. Or perhaps not. He recalled how Thrall had fought in the ring, recalled how even those ragtag orcs had put up a surprisingly good fight. We can't afford to take risks. If we're attacked, my men have standing orders to kill them all. Briefly, he thought about the fury that raged in him when the orc leader had sent back his response to Uther's offer of surrender. The two men who had been sent in to parley had been killed, their horses returning riderless, in a wordless, brutal message.
Let's get in there and destroy the beasts, he'd cried, the weapon he had been given at his initiation into the Silver Hand glowing brightly. He would have charged in immediately had not Uther placed a restraining hand on his arm.
Remember, Arthas, he had said, his voice calm. We are paladins.
Vengeance cannot be a part of what we must do. If we allow our passions to turn to bloodlust, then we will become as vile as the orcs.
The words penetrated the anger. Somewhat. Arthas had clenched his teeth, watching as the frightened horses, their riders butchered, were led away. Uther's words were wisdom, but Arthas felt he had failed the men who'd been on those horses. Failed them, just as he'd failed Invincible, and now they were as dead as that great beast. He took a deep, steadying breath. Yes, Uther. His calmness had been rewarded. Uther had charged him with leading the attack. If only he'd been in time to save those three poor men. A gentle hand on his arm called him back to the present, and without thinking, out of old habit, he covered Jaina's hand with his own. She started to pull away, then gave him a slightly strained smile.
It's so very, very good to see you again, he said impulsively.
Her smile softened, became genuine, and she squeezed his arm.
You too, Your Highness.
By the way, thanks for holding your men back when we met. The smile became a full-fledged grin.
I told you once before, I'm not a fragile little figurine.
He chuckled.
Indeed not, my lady. You will fight alongside us in these battles.
She sighed. I pray there is no fighting, only investigating. But I will do what I must. I always have.
Jaina withdrew her hand. Arthas hid his disappointment.
As we all do, my lady.
Oh, stop that. I'm Jaina.
And I'm Arthas. Nice to meet you.
She shoved him then, and they laughed. And suddenly a barrier was gone between them. His heart warmed as he looked down at her, at his side once again. They were facing real danger together for the first time. He was conflicted. He wanted to keep her safe, but he also wanted to let her shine in her abilities. Had he done the right thing? Was it too late? He'd told her that he wasn't ready, and that had been true. He hadn't been ready for a lot of things then, but much had changed since that winter veil, and some things hadn't changed at all. All kinds of emotions tore at him, and he pushed them all away except one, simple pleasure in her presence. They made camp that night before dusk, and a small clearing close to the road. There was no moonlight, only the stars, glittering in the ebony darkness above them. Jaina jokingly lit the fire, conjured some delicious breads and beverages, then declared, "I'm done." The men laughed and obligingly prepared the rest of the meal, skewering rabbits over spits and unpacking fruits. Wine was passed around, and the feeling was almost more of a group of comrades enjoying the evening than a battle-ready unit investigating a deadly plague. Afterward, Jaina sat a little bit away from the group. Her eyes were on the skies, a smile playing on her lips. Arthas joined her and offered her more wine. She held out her goblet while he poured, and then took a sip. "This is a lovely vintage, your..." "Arthas," she said. "One of the benefits of being a prince," he replied. He stretched out his long legs and lay down next to her, one arm behind his head as a pillow, the other arm holding the goblet steady on his chest as he looked up at the stars. "What do you think we're going to find?"
"I don't know. I was sent as an investigator. I do wonder if it doesn't have something to do with demons, though, given your encounter with the orcs."
He nodded in the darkness, then, realizing she couldn't see him, said, "I agree. I wonder if we shouldn't have brought a priest along with us now." She turned to smile at him. "You're a paladin, Arthas. The light works through you. Plus, you swing a weapon better than any priest I've seen." He grinned at that. The moment hung between them, and just as he started to reach out a hand to her, she sighed and got to her feet, finishing the wine.
"It's late. I don't know about you, but I'm exhausted. I'll see you in the morning. Sleep well, Arthas."
But he couldn't sleep. He tossed and turned in his bedroll, staring up at the sky, the night sounds contriving to catch his attention even when he did start to drift off. He could take it no more. He'd always been impulsive, and he knew it, but damn it. He threw back the blankets and sat up. The camp was still. They were in no danger here, so there was no one set to watch. Quietly, Arthas rose and went to the area where he knew Jaina was sleeping. He knelt down beside her and brushed her hair back from her face.
"Jaina," he whispered, "wake up."
As she had done that night so long ago, she again awoke in silence and unafraid, blinking up at him curiously. He grinned. "You up for an adventure?" She tilted her head, smiling, the memories obviously coming back to her as well. "What sort of an adventure?" she countered.
"Trust me."
"I always have, Arthas." They spoke in whispers, their breath visible in the cold night air. She was propped up on one elbow now, and he imitated her, reaching with his other hand to touch her face. She did not pull back.
"Jaina, I think there was a reason we were brought together again."
There it was, the little furrow in her brow.
"Of course. Your father sent you because..."
"No, no. More than that. We're working together as a team now. We work well that way." She was very still. He continued to caress the smooth curve of her cheek.
When this is all over, maybe we can talk, you know."
"About what ended at Wintervale?"
"No, not about endings. About beginnings. Because things have felt very incomplete to me without you. You know me like no one else does, Jaina. And I've missed that.
She was silent for a long moment, then sighed softly and leaned her cheek into his hand.